Here in Orlando, Florida, O-Town Compost is leading the composting revolution, recycling organic waste into a nutrient-rich resource. Join Charlie Pioli, founder of O-Town Compost, as we hear from the nation's leading voices behind the grassroots community composting movement. Welcome to the Community Composting Podcast.
If you enjoy the Community Composting Podcast and want to support future episodes, please follow the link in the episode show notes to give a small monthly reoccurring donation, even if it's $5 to $10 a month. We'll continue to come out with killer content to keep the grassroots movement rolling.
Hi, this is Charlie. We're here for episode number 9 with Callie Roeau of Suncoast Compost, located in the Tampa, St. Pete area of Florida. Callie, you guys have been at it for a few years now, and I've been seeing you from down the road, down Interstate 4, and seeing how successful you guys have been, you know, bringing community composting to the Bay Area. And I am super excited to ask you some questions and find out more about your operation.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, we're about to celebrate our 4 years. Yeah, on Earth Day. It's our four-year Earth Day, like, birthday.
4 or 5. Yeah, I think that's awesome. So what is the genesis story of Suncoast Compost? Like, why did you and your husband, who are the owners of the company, why did you start it 4 years ago?
Yeah, so actually I should know how old it is, because it's my daughter's fault and she's 4 years old. So I was a teacher, and once I had my baby, I wanted something that, you know, I could have some flexibility and hang out at home with her when she was really young. And so my husband's a biologist, and we had this awesome, like, aquaponic system at our house. You know, we had the black soldier fly bin feeding into the chickens and the tilapia, and just like really closing the loop. And we were having community members out, students, and people were so into the black soldier fly bin, which, for people who don't know it, is a way of breaking down food waste. But that could be another sidebar. Anyways.
So
we had, people were so into it. And so we saw that there were other community composters, specifically Let Us Compost in Athens, Georgia, was kind of a big inspiration for us.
Oh, Kristen's
not doing that anymore.
With Let Us Compost. Yeah.
Yeah. So we went up and we visited with her, and on the drive back, we're like, well, I guess we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. We just stuck with it.
Cool. And yeah, just to touch on the black soldier fly larva, is they're like very prevalent here in Florida, where it's a warm temperature pretty much year round. And, you know, I built a bin myself that was processing 10 pounds a day, and I just did it for fun, but it was amazing how fast they chomp through the food waste, and they eat anything from raw meat to junk food like McDonald's.
Yeah, they love sugar. Twinkies. They love fats.
Yeah.
Protein. Yeah. Yeah. We actually have a good time-lapse video of black soldier fly demolishing a big, and it takes them I think it was 10,000 black soldier flies, and it took them 4 or 5 hours. That we can that or something.
And I would
encourage, they're incredible. They're really incredible.
Encourage the listeners to watch, go on YouTube, look up black soldier fly time lapse of a pizza. Like, it is quite incredible as well. But yeah, I know you guys on your website say you're recycling your food scraps with black soldier flies. How much of your operation is just aerated composting versus black soldier flies?
Yeah, so I think we've updated the website. If not, we need to. We're not focused on black soldier fly as much as we were, just because of the volume that we started taking in. We would have needed like a significant infrastructure cost to create like the breeding programs and things mm-hmm. that you need to keep the black soldier flies.
Okay. Yeah. Just let us know how much of your operation is black soldier flies? How much are you doing aerated composting?
Yeah, so now it's 100% modified static aerobic piles.
Okay.
And of course, there are black soldier flies in there.
Yeah.
Helping along with all kinds of other fun things, but we don't have like a source separated black soldier fly going on anymore.
Yeah, black soldier flies just show up and they're welcome. They really chomp through it. But yeah. I saw that you guys had formed a partnership with a farm there in North Tampa Bay area. I heard that you guys had to move to a different farm. How did the original partnership with the farm work out? And what is the new partnership like?
Yeah. So we started in our backyard in Riverview, and there was this farm, or is this farm, a Simpler Place Farm and Market that was just 5 minutes from our house. And we were customers of the farm going there for local food. And as we were outgrowing our backyard that first year, the owner of the farm agreed to let us use a portion of the farm for the compost operations. And then we give them like half of the finished compost back to the farm. Mm. And then the other half usually would go to our composters, our subscribers, and they could get that finished share back. So that was great. That partnership helped keep over 150, close to 200,000 pounds of food waste out of the landfill here in Tampa Bay. Over a few years. And then we personally moved to Tampa because my husband works in Ybor. And so we wanted to be cut down on that commute. And so we've just kind of slowly been trying to see how we can bring everything closer, just personally. Like, we went to one car and, you know, trying to bike more places. So this new urban farm is just 5 minutes from our house. So once again, we just are really fortunate to have these local farms around Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, I've seen your posts on the Community Composter Forum, and you've mentioned some things in these composter farm partnerships that, maybe should be in writing, and maybe, you know, other composters should know about if they plan on partnering with a farm. What are some of those, you know, discrepancies that can arise in a farm partnership?
Yeah, that's a good question. Our first partnership just luckily worked out organically. The owner was super generous, and we just had good communication. We also like partnered with them with some agritourism things as well. But just being, you know, yeah, mindful of, you never know. When we signed on with this new farm, we made sure to have an agreement, which they're also super wonderful and generous people, but you just want to have things in writing. So what are some things? Just being clear about how much compost they will get back. Mm-hmm. When you would have access to this space. How, like, the footprint, being really clear about the footprint of the piles.
Presumably so that you're not taking up space that they would like be using or anything.
Yeah, you never know like what kind of future plans people have for things, and you know, they don't know a lot of times too, and so you just don't want to assume water usage, making sure that was okay. Those are the things that come off right now. And then, I mean, honestly, just having something that's really clear, like, well, this isn't everything, but like, let's make sure we talk about things whenever things come up and we'll agree on it. And yeah, just.
Cool. Are your farm partners or your current one, are they encouraging you to bring in more volume, or are they cool with where you're at, or they are a little hesitant as the volume grows?
Well, that was part of our agreement too, is that we're going to stay under the 100 cubic yards, which is the Florida regulations for not having to be regulated in a sense, just normal farming operations, just to keep things easy. So as of now, that's working out. So we'll just kind of see like what sort of need they have. It's going to be something that we figure out. It is an urban farm, right? So it's not huge. It's only probably 3 or so acres. So we couldn't expand too much, even if they wanted us to or we wanted to.
Okay. And my other question relates to your zero waste events. I mean, I am not ashamed to say I kind of looked at your website, at your zero waste event service and how you do it. And I've done like a few of them now, and it's been a learning experience. You know, we've done probably close to 5 or 6 weddings now and a bunch of others, but you know, how do you approach zero waste events? Are you looking for the more completely zero waste, or are you looking from just, we're going to divert your food waste and you know, that, what is your service like? How would you describe it?
Yeah, so we can offer either one. We can just grab your food scraps, or we can push to go for that 90% or more reduction in waste. Most of the time, if they're inquiring, they do, you know, they want to go as far as they can push the organization, or if it's a wedding, you know, they want to do everything they can. So it is a very it's just always a very interesting dance, very interesting, like psychosocial guidance counselor kind of relationship. I feel like a coach a lot of times, because so we do a lot of consulting leading up to the event. So it's not just like, hey, what's the date? All right, we'll show up with our stuff. Like, it's a lot of educating, because people don't really know where things go right after the recycling bin or trash bin. So it's a lot of clearing up misconceptions about, especially with recycling, you know. And yeah, just knowing when to push and offer other suggestions, and knowing when to say, hey, this is a journey, like this is a start. And then like next year, because a lot of times we'll have recurring events, you know, we'll push for like this next action item next year. And right, weddings are different, right? But with a lot of the events that are with organizations, having a really good analysis for them after the event. Like, you know, we take weights for everything and we make notes of everything. Like, here's all the things you did great. Here's what you can improve for next year. Here's what didn't go so well. And then it's so great to look at it before the next year's event and be like, hey, here's how you did. Like, let's beat this. And just, yeah, it takes time, but I put that into the price of creating that report.
And the one-time events, how are you able to bake all that into the one-time weddings or something like that?
Yeah, well, they're just always usually a little more straightforward and smaller. So, yeah, so it works out. But I still do charge, I still in that price have the consulting in there. Like I mean, usually for a wedding, like I'm probably gonna spend like an hour or two back and forth via emails, you know. They're like, what about this product? I'm like, what about this one? Or let's not use that. So anyways, an hour or two probably at least, and so I just put that in the price.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say from our experiences, there's always that kind of back and forth on the products leading up. Even though when I approach the client, the event client, I'm like, we can definitely recycle your food waste. We're not out here to make the event full zero waste, because typically if the ones having the event want to go full zero waste, they're going to spearhead it themselves. And we're just a component of that. But we do the same thing where we reach out to the other vendors and make sure that hopefully they're using compostable serviceware. The flowers at a wedding, for example, don't have pesticides. They're sourced locally. But yeah, I mean, that is a, it's a good way of looking at it. And I think we charge about the same, you know, probably $300 to $500 per event for like a, you know, 8 hour event, something like that.
Yeah, our minimum is $350, and then I guess our highest has been maybe like around $3,500 for like a 4,000 person event.
That's really cool. Yeah. Yeah, I hope to get that someday in the future.
Do you?
Just signed on the soccer stadium here in town.
So oh, wow.
That's like, you know, that could be like three games in a week. So that could be big. Wow. But yeah, I overall think that food scraps are generated very heavily during events. So it's a necessary service to have if you want to like take a significant bite out of the food scraps. So
for sure. Yeah, we're just really missing the industrial composter option here in Tampa Bay. Like, I can only process so much. And, you know, with young kids and just where our priorities are, I'm just not able to take on the volume that our region really desperately needs.
As you start to take on more food scraps, you realize very quickly that you need a better composting system to process the material. This is why I highly recommend the aerated static pile microbin designed and made easy by O2 Compost. In 60 days, I have finished compost without putting in the labor of turning the pile. The piles heat up to over 140 degrees, killing pathogens, weed seeds, and fly larvae, making the end product safe to use in the garden. With 32 plus years of experience in the compost industry, Peter Moon, owner of O2 Compost, is a leading expert in the field of ASP composting. I encourage you to set up a free half an hour consultation with Peter Moon by going to his website, www.o2compost.com. That's the letter O, the number 2, compost.com. If you mention that you heard about O2 Compost on this podcast, you'll receive a 10% discount on the purchase of the Microbin Compost Training Program. How is the collection going for Suncoast Compost? You know, I see that you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I gathered, is you guys give people like 13, 12 gallon totes and maybe a roll of liners to start, but then ongoing that they don't use liners. They're kind of responsible for cleaning out their own bin, but you dump it into a larger container and you do collection with a pickup truck and like a tub in the back of the pickup truck, so you can accumulate waste as you go, like the food scraps.
Yeah, we really didn't want to get into the bucket washing game. And I mean, our customers don't know any different. So it's just how we do it. yeah, the curbside composters get the 13 gallon Orbis with the latches, which, side note, sometimes, occasionally, like I think we probably lose like 10 or so a year being stolen. I'm not sure who's taking them. I have no idea. Anyways, besides the being stolen.
They put
stolen,
on the curb, like the curb.
Usually they're stolen from an alleyway.
Ah.
Yeah. But besides that, we've been happy with them. We give people 3-gallon bio bags and a shirt clothes bin. And we give them a magnet. People really love the magnets.
Kitchen caddy, like the 3-gallon kitchen caddy or whatever?
Yeah, the brand we use is Shirt Clothes. They're about $6 each. And then I see them retail on like Amazon for like 15 or 20. And we just get them in a pallet of maybe like 75 or maybe it's 150. I have to order some soon here. But they hold up really well. The bio bag fits it well. We like bio bags. They've broken down nicely for us. And the headquarters are, you know, just right down the street from us over in Dunedin, and they've been really supportive of community composters for a long time. And then we do drop off where people get the same kitchen bin and bio bags, and they just pick up more bio bags as they need at the drop off location. We just like attach a little mail, a little like letterbox at the drop off station, and they just grab from there.
They grab business rolls, or do they grab just,
you know, I honestly don't know what people are doing. I would imagine people are doing different things, but I've only had like a few times in the past 4 years where someone's emailed me and been like, there, we're out, there aren't any. I'm like, oh, sorry. So people are just taking what they need.
How many of your subscribers are drop off versus pickup?
Yeah. Let me think here. So I think we probably have about 100 drop off and then about 70 homes, or is it, it might be 60 like residential curbside, and then maybe about 10 or 15 businesses that are curbside.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it sounds like people definitely like the drop off. And is there like any city of Tampa or Hillsborough County, free drop off programs? Like here in Orlando, the city just at the farmers markets, they do free drop off. So that was a clear cut signal to me, like, I'm not going to offer drop off. It's already free for a lot of these people. I'm just gonna focus on pickup. So
the city doesn't offer free drop off, but there are many options through, you know, small farms or community gardens. There's like the website Make Soil and similar ones where people can seek out free quote unquote options. Like it does irk me a little bit when people are like, why would I pay for it? I'm like, well, I mean, nothing's free. Like a volunteer is providing the quote unquote free opportunity. This is just like another option. So what I'm trying to get at is that I really believe that we need a robust ecosystem of composting options. And so I think there's just always going to be people that are just looking for the like click the button and that reliability, you know, because we're not going to have that interruption in service. And also people like, for us, we accept meat and cheese and things, and we do currently accept compostable items. So I know that some people have told me that they like using our service because at the community garden, they can't drop off meat and they just want to make it easy, put everything in there. I will say to all the community composters out there that are trying to do this as a business and make it sustainable and earn a living from this, like I really recommend the drop off option. It is the best profit margin for us. There is one drop off site where we have 50 people dropping off and we charge $20 a month for the drop off. I mean, I this maybe sounds a little callous, but like it's kind of like the gym membership situation where people sign up and they want to do it and they just don't. And so not everybody's utilizing it all the time. It's not that I don't want them to. It's just, you know, the reality of doing this tough business is like that you need that.
The reason drop-off is so economical from the composter standpoint is we make one trip there.
Exactly. Right.
It's not like pickup where if your route isn't dense, then you're really, it is not cost effective. So yeah, I totally see why that's where your profit margin is at. I think it is a big risk to start pickup service, and you know, those first 6 months, maybe even a year, you're literally like not doing it very profitable, but you just hope, you pray over time, the density is going to fill in and then it does become more profitable. So,
yeah. Yep, for sure. Yep. So yeah. I highly recommend drop off. It's what like carries us through.
Nice.
But yeah, drop off, as far as like revenue during non-COVID times, it's probably like almost 30-30-30. Drop off, curbside, and then events.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah, your events are...
But we're not doing events right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. COVID time. Well, I hope that comes back COVID, for you. Yeah. Yeah. I hope that comes back for you relatively shortly. Like, I got my first vaccine.
Yeah.
It's a matter of time.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, you know, I come from, my background is in solid waste consulting, and I saw that you guys had created like an offshoot of Suncoast Compost that was about waste consulting and maybe partnering with some local restaurants and cafes like the Black Crow Cafe in St. Pete. When I was there, you know, about 6 months ago, I visited the cafe and saw
Black Crow Coffee. In case anyone's trying to look it up, it's Black Crow Coffee.
Black Crow Coffee. Yeah, I'll make sure to link that in the show notes. Yeah, but I saw your analysis on the doorway, and it was really cool. You had all the charts and pie charts kind of showing the material composition found in the coffee shop. And not to mention the coffee shop was just like doing the most, you know, they were making sure no one was walking away with a single use plastic or disposable cup. So yeah, tell me a little bit about that offshoot consulting company and, you know, how's it going?
Yeah, so it was Shift Consulting, and I did it with a wonderful friend who is still a friend, but we are not doing Shift anymore. We decided to close it down at the beginning of COVID. We were really trying to target offices, and we just weren't really sure what the future would be like there. But we did work with a handful of very large corporations, and you know, those places move really slowly. it was discouraging, you could say, but I think that just being a cheerleader for the people within organizations who want to push their organizations forward, giving them the knowledge and the education and just answering those questions that, you know, we live with every day. So empowering them with knowledge was really helpful. We, you know, all of them, it was very like standard procedure to have a waste audit, and almost all of them, and getting the employees in there is very memorable. And yeah, I'm just providing that awesome data to have that baseline of, look, here's where you guys are now. Yeah. So yeah, always a waste like audit. If
more businesses have done a waste audit, they would like glean so much information. But of course it does take someone who's familiar with the material composition and like the products that are out there to really tell them what the waste audit data means. And I feel like I feel like it might be, you know, more challenging for the small businesses to create a consulting company like Lyft. Whereas for there's, you know, like my old company, they do waste audits and composition studies for municipalities as a whole. And, you know, they're not able to sample one day's worth of trash. They take like 8 samples per day, and each sample is 200 pounds. And that's supposed to be a representation of like the whole county or the whole city's waste stream. Or, you know, you look at the companies that are doing it for the Fortune 500 companies like Apple or Amazon, FedEx. Like in my old company, I would go to FedEx facilities. I think it is challenging to kind of come up with this consulting practice as an ad hoc business on the side of composting. But I think that's really cool that you got into that and at least brought some of that to the St. Pete community. And, you know, Black Crow Coffee Shop is probably killing it right now. So
yeah, they're fantastic. I would definitely recommend it if you feel like you have that capacity in terms of educating what's going on in waste these days. Just offer it as part of your services. It doesn't have to be a separate business. You can just have kind of a flat fee based on maybe a couple packages, and one of those including, you know, a waste audit. And for sure, very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. Like it's not too hard to perform like a, you know, a 24-hour snapshot waste audit for a
It could be a visual waste audit too. You don't have to
sort anything. You could just do it visually and
take pictures, slap them in a document, and that can be helpful. Yeah, we charged anywhere from like $50 to $125 an hour. So it's a little hard to like figure out how many hours and the scope of the work. So yeah, I'm just saying it is, if you have the time to add this on, I think it can be a really helpful additional revenue stream.
And it just, you got to get in there, break open some trash bags, and you can even kind of see how much food waste they're throwing out. So you can give them a better estimate in how much you'll be diverting as the composter. So yeah, but I think that was my only all my questions. My last question to all my guests are, what is some advice for community composters who are starting up that you would, you know, give them? But thanks so much for the interview.
Yeah, thanks. Advice for people just starting up. I'm pretty passionate about pricing. I see a lot of community composters just not charging enough for their services. And I know like every city is different, but our prices doesn't quite cover the cost. So I don't know, it's hard to like your customer probably, you know, like I'm not gonna pay for composting, but other people need me to do it. And so just be really honest with those numbers about the hours and hours and hours that you're putting in, and the vehicles and the bins and the insurance. Yeah. Oh my God, the insurance. So like, I just think that there are people out there that will pay the price that it requires. So I just want people to be like compensated for their time.
Real quick, because do you guys have like commercial auto insurance for your?
Yes, yeah.
Wow, how much are you paying per month?
Ours is not bad because it's just one pickup truck, and it's a old pickup truck. Old. So what do we pay a year? I want to say like it's somewhere between like $1,500 and $2,000. So it's not bad from what I've heard from other community composters.
Yeah.
And it's through Geico.
That's still, yeah. I mean, when I got my first quote for my pickup truck, for a commercial auto insurance quote, it was $1,000 a month. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's crazy. So, and then general liability is typically in the range of $200 to $300 a month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So be prepared for that, listeners. Insurance is the biggest shocker, but it probably can be useful if something does happen. So it's worth it. I presume you have drivers who, you know, they, you know, might get in an accident and you want to have insurance in that case. So,
yeah. Well, that was, yeah. So please, yeah, charge accordingly. And on a positive note, like, it has just been great how composting and community, like, you know, share the same roots of coming together. We've just met so many great people and made wonderful, I hope, lifelong friends from doing this dirty, dirty work. And yeah, it's special. Like, I don't feel like, why am I doing this? It always feels like, well, doing my part.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Callie. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and best of luck to Suncoast Compost.
Thanks. You too, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Please rate and review on whichever podcast platform you're listening to. If you feel like this is good content and you're learning a lot about composting,